Now, anybody who was listening to the programme this time last night, we still had about 2.5 hours to go on our programme. There was not much longer, I suppose, to go on the whole calling of the votes as they came in. It certainly finished a lot earlier to decide that Donald Trump was the 47th president of the United States, or he will be when he takes up office. You joined us last night, Errol Moore, coach. There was a bit of uncertainty at that stage, but it's all nailed on now.
Yeah, it certainly came around for us. We had a resounding mandate from the popular vote all the way through the Congress and Senate, and obviously the Electoral College. Add that to the Supreme Court, and the American people obviously trust our message to give us such an amazing ability to enact the change that we hope to do. So it's been a great day for us.
Okay, I suppose you always hoped, you may have been confident, but you don't know till you know. Looking at the television screens last night, how long did you stick with the coverage before you went to bed, happy at least that your candidate had at least a nose ahead?
Oh, I didn't go to bed. I stayed awake the entire time until I was confident that it was being called by CNN. When I saw CNN and MSNBC calling it, then I considered going to sleep. But I didn't trust a single thing, and a lot of my friends said the same thing. They stayed awake all the way through, anticipating the worst, you know, and thankfully nothing happened. So it was great, but definitely we stuck through it. Nobody was relaxed.
Right. Poor old Lachlan Murdoch will be gutted that you didn't trust Fox to call it.
I'm sorry.
I said poor old Lachlan Murdoch, the man behind Fox News, will be gutted that you weren't waiting for Fox's, or you didn't go with Fox's decision. I say it in jest. What would you say the main issue was, on hindsight, looking at the exit polls that were conducted afterwards, the list of issues as they piled up? There was some kind of ambiguity at the beginning of the exit polls of this issue of, you know, democracy being on the ballot paper in this election. 73% of people said it was, but it wasn't quite clear what they meant by it. But in terms of the other issues that were clear, what one do you think was the salient one for voters in America?
I think it's a combination of the economy and the border being intertwined. And energy is tied right into there. So you have low energy, then you're able to have a more robust economy. When you have controlled immigration, legal immigration, that's a boon to America. That's what makes us a great melting pot of immigrants. So I think that message is what resoundingly went home. And you saw the Latino vote come out for Trump like no other in Republican history. You saw the Islamic vote or Muslim vote come to Trump. You saw Jewish voters go to Trump almost 50-50 in some places, and they're usually a 70-30 Democrat block. So you saw the Amish. The Amish came out to vote. How do you pull Amish? It's impossible to pull Amish, but these people obviously saw in Donald Trump an economic message or a general message. They don't have television. They don't have radio.
I suppose the answer to the question, how do you pull Amish, is with a horse-drawn cart, as we were discussing last night. There was a big play made on, you know, that a wave of women would support Kamala Harris. It was described today in the post-election analysis as more of a ripple than a wave.
Yeah, and I think that's because the Republican Party is a safe place for women as well. And a lot of the misinformation about Donald Trump wanting a national abortion ban, or that we're somehow some cold-hearted party that wants women who have medical conditions or have been raped or something, that isn't the position of all Republicans. There's fringe people who've said some things like that, and we denounce them. And certainly there is a separation of church and state. And while we might be more conducive to people of faith joining our party because we have respect for that, that doesn't mean that their faith supersedes the rule of the land. And now Republican women came out. It's interesting to note, like, people came, take an example with Montana. They voted overwhelmingly for the Republican candidate and overwhelmingly to keep the abortion protections in that state, just like in Kansas. So the majority of these states, women walked in and said, yes, I'm voting for abortion rights because now it's a state issue, and I'm voting for Donald Trump. And so obviously that was a resounding rebuke of the Democrat narrative that there was some sort of Stepford wife who was being abused by her right-wing MAGA husband, who was going to go into the voter box in a terrible, loveless marriage and finally have her voice heard. It was like a caricature of something that wasn't real, and that isn't the America that I know. Those aren't the people in the country that I grew up with. And I think that's what led to a Republican victory.
Okay. I should have introduced you properly at the start, Errol, because Errol Morcoach is a spokesman for Republicans Overseas UK. You're speaking to us at the moment from California, but I suppose you are overseas. I presume part of your job is to convince your fellow Americans in the overseas areas to vote Republican when they're casting their vote. So I want to bring it home to a slightly more parochial issue here. People are looking at Donald Trump talking about tariffs, looking at his approach to trade, potentially how he might relate to the European Union, and they may be wondering how's Ireland going to fare in the shakeout.
Well, I think that's a very salient concern, and I think Ireland is poised to be in a great position. I think a lot of American big tech companies are in Ireland, right? And a lot of Irish GDP and stuff is derived from that, and a lot of jobs are created from that. Those are not products that are going to be tariffed. The things that are going to be tariffed are if you are competing with American manufacturing, which is basically on its last legs. So Chinese cars, potentially steel from India, these types of things. But from the exports from Ireland, you're not seeing the same type of competition. Not that it's not competitive, but it's not detrimental to the American worker for us to trade with Ireland.
What about the corporation tax? Sorry to cut across here, but the promise to bring corporation tax to 15%, that's a part of Ireland's offering. It's not the sole offering, but I mean, I'm just looking over the pre-election document. I know it wasn't Trump's manifesto necessarily, but it was seen as influential. This Project 2025 document highlighted Ireland having a $54 billion trade surplus with the US. It seemed to some people perhaps that Ireland, with a big pharma sector export industry, might have a target on its back with the incoming administration.
Would that be in the context of the United States making it much more affordable for American companies to bring their dollars home and therefore reducing the investment that's remaining?
That some of the large multinationals who had headquartered overseas to benefit partially from the tax rate, amongst other things, that America would seek obviously to attract them home, but that Ireland might be a particular focus of attention because of the $54 billion trade surplus it has with the United States.
You know, that is a real concern, and I think that's something that would have to be worked out, because that is having a trade imbalance with Ireland isn't exactly hurting America, right? We derive a lot of benefit from having the Irish talent in our transnational corporations, and so certainly it's a real fear because Trump wants to attract that money back, and that would be a detriment to Ireland. Now, keep in mind, Trump is America first, and he's thinking, hey, these companies are keeping their money offshore. How can I attract it back? But I don't think that Donald Trump wants to be detrimental to the Irish economy. He does have business interests in Ireland, and I think he's a man who's open to making a deal. And so if these things are brought to his attention and he's able to work with U.S. tech companies and whatnot to perhaps create some kind of new system or something that isn't so detrimental, but certainly that's a fair question and something that will have to be explored, because that is a fair point. It could be something that is going to pull American money out of Ireland, and that would be detrimental, I guess, to the Irish people.
And finally, just and very briefly, he said he'd cut a deal with Russia and get the Ukraine war solved in 24 hours. Do you think setting such a short timetable would actually progress a deal that would be durable?
I think it's a little bit of a turn of phrase with Donald Trump, as in the plan that he's going to propose would take basically one day to sit down and work out. And what he's going to say is look, the reality of the matter is the Donbass and the Russian-speaking portions of Ukraine, they've been invaded. And unless you want, a million people have died in this conflict. International arms dealers have been making a fortune across the board. And at some point, the carnage has to stop. And Ukraine is going to have to come to the table, and probably in exchange for that parcel of their land, they're going to get extreme U.S. security guarantees, investment, tons of loans and these kind of things. And it's not an ideal solution, but I think it's better than piles and piles of bodies. And that's what Donald Trump's going to come in. He's going to come in to make a deal. And some people are going to say, he's bending the knee of Putin by conceding something. But that's the art of the deal. You have to give something to get something. And right now, the most important thing is to stop the bloodshed. And that's what the American people voted for. Also in Gaza and in Israel, we want peace. And we don't want perpetual wars. And if you want peace, you're going to have to talk to your enemies. Right now, there's 10,000 North Korean soldiers on the border of Ukraine. This is a Pacific Ocean nuclear power. it's too extreme. We need detente.
Okay, Errol Moore, coach, spokesperson for Republicans Overseas UK. Thanks very much for joining us on that. Well, Louise, what do you make of that? Is it a good or a bad, in terms of brass tax money, is it a good or a bad day for Ireland?
I think the Irish government is approaching this with a certain level of caution, and the Taoiseach was on radio earlier and he was saying that Donald Trump certainly isn't the first US president or US president-elect to say that he wants to bring business back to America, and he said it before and it didn't necessarily happen before. So there's kind of this air of caution. Enterprise Minister Peter Burke was out on the plinth in Leinster House this evening as well, and he was saying that he's no immediate concern for Irish jobs. I mean, it's very clear that Ireland has had a very good relationship with the US under Joe Biden's presidency. And I think you saw that when Joe Biden was here last year, I think it was for 4 or 5 days, and the kind of the welcome he was given, the events that were put on across the country. And the Taoiseach has said that, you know, we'll work with anyone, and we have worked with Trump before and we'll continue to work with him. But you can also imagine that this is perhaps not the outcome that they were hoping for.
All right. So Barry Ward, you could never be gladder that Michael Noonan met Donald Trump off the red carpet with a harpist playing in the background in the pouring rain as he jetted in to visit Doonbeg.
I don't know about that, but I must say I feel for people living in Ukraine, people living in Gaza, people living in Taiwan. They are not going to feel the security. The notion that there'd be a settlement of the Russian invasion of Ukraine by settling the borders where they are now is grotesque. And the notion that he's going to solve the Gaza war by what? By arming Israel further is grotesque. And I think there's a lot of people around the world who feel much less safe today than they did yesterday. It's a really disappointing result. Louise is absolutely right, though. The government can't throw the baby out of the bathwater. They have to manage.
There's a lot of Arab Americans who looked at what Donald Trump was offering and thought, could he really be any worse than the Biden administration?
Yeah, and I think that the Biden administration really let down Kamala Harris on that front. I think they could have done an awful lot more. They should have done an awful lot more. And I don't honestly understand Arab Americans who have made that choice. I can't fathom that, to be honest with you. But I think Louise is right in terms of the government's approach. The government has to approach this from a pragmatic standpoint, manage its relationship. It can be managed, and it has to be managed in the interests of all the people in Ireland. And unfortunately, much as we might like to thump the table and rail against Donald Trump, that is not in the interests of Ireland to do. But I think as a member of Fine Gael and as an elected person, I can certainly say I'm hugely disappointed with the result, and I'm fearful for lots of communities around the world.
All right. Michael Fitzmaurice, it's not known yet what Donald Trump is going to do, but in the teeth of an election with people making money promises for the next 5 years in Ireland, is it time maybe to revise downwards some of the spending plans and maybe start planning for the rainy day?
I think the first thing we have to do is that Donald Trump got elected in America by the majority of the voters, and you have to respect democracy. That's the first thing. The second thing is that he was in, 4 years ago or more, and he was on about, you know, bringing business back to America. The wheels are slow, as we all know in government, and we all know how civil servants work. And he's a businessman as well. And you need to cut a deal with the likes of them to make sure that we protect it. But there's two sides to this. Yes, there's a lot of American multinationals here in this country, but there's probably 120,000 Irish companies in America that America relies on. So it's not just all one-way traffic. And I think what we should do is respect him that he's got to be the president of America. We need to make sure that we talk to the guy. We need to make sure that we do the best deals for us, because we have to protect our country. Like, if you look at what he's doing, we don't like it. But actually what he's talking about is protecting his country that way. But we have to make sure that we get the best possible deal to hold all those jobs here, to make sure that he doesn't basically pull a destruct button on us. But on top of that, he's not a fool that he'll realise that there's 120 or 30,000 Irish companies abroad in his country.
But would you concede that there's a bit of uncertainty?
Yeah, there is, yeah.
Okay,
there is, yeah.
Darren O'Rourke, would you know, bit of uncertainty about Donald Trump coming in. Is it as well for people, for the incoming government, or at least people who aspire to be the incoming government, to start maybe having a look at the contents of rainy day funds and saying maybe they need to be a bit fuller for the years ahead?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. One, in terms of any suggestion of tariffs or different moves in that regard, it is the case that works both ways. So, you know, the European Union, for example, so like, I don't think anybody wants a trade war or anything like that. I think there's a couple of things that, and it didn't take Donald Trump getting elected to tell us about it. We are exposed in terms of the amount of taxes that we have coming from so few companies. We need to diversify. I have strongly made the case that the opportunity for Ireland, and I think it chimes with all of this, is in around a green economy, as in delivering energy independence and security, becoming an energy exporter, creating jobs, building a whole new economy around that here. And also, I think that will be a key decision factor for FDI and international companies when they're looking to locate somewhere. Availability of clean, green energy will be a key part of that. And we have a unique opportunity that this government or previous governments haven't availed.